When the prison on McNeil Island in South Puget Sound closed in 2011, it was the last prison in the country accessible only by air or water. Being an island prison made McNeil unique, and in the fourth episode of our podcast series, Forgotten Prison, KNKX reporters Simone Alisea and Paula Whistle explore the island life, especially for families who called it home. Simone talked about the latest episode with KNKX Morning Edition host Kirsten Kendrick.
Simone, why were there families on McNeil Island?
Well, being on an island, Kirsten, you know, the prison needed to have access to people right away. So that meant, you know, people with certain skills or who were high up, they needed to be there, which meant they brought their families there. There were neighborhoods and homes, and that's where they lived.
And with the families come kids. And it was interesting for me to learn in this episode that there was a lot of freedom for kids living on the island. And it's ironic since they were near a prison.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the first time I talked to somebody who grew up on the island and they were like, oh, there was no crime to speak of. And I was like, what? You're next to the criminals. They're all right there. But, you know, you realize they are locked up.
Right.
So, of course, there's no crime. So that meant the kids kind of had free reign over this just beautiful island. They would go fishing and they would go clamming and they started driving when they were 12 because there were no police around and they had these like junker island cars. So, you know, they really look back on it as just this beautiful time in their lives.
The kids seem to have a lot of interaction with the inmates, more than you might expect.
Yeah, so because the prison was on an island, the other side of that is that they had to be very self-sufficient, and that meant inmates did a lot of things. They had a, you know, this pool of cheap labor. You know, one story that we heard a lot was about Alvin Karpis, who's this Depression-era gangster, public enemy number one, big deal. By the time he ended up at McNeil Island, he was driving the school bus. He drove kids to a one-room schoolhouse on the island. My colleague, Paula Whistle, she explains it really well in this excerpt of the podcast. We're also going to hear from Becca Ritchie and Anne Berkeley, who grew up on the island in the 70s.
So here's how a mobster became a school bus driver. McNeil was a federal prison from when Washington became a state through the late 1970s. At the time, prisoners could work towards release and become known as trustees. In many cases, they helped sort of run things at a prison. On McNeil, that could mean daily interaction with families.
After the state took over the prison in 1981, most people say inmates were kept more separated from the families of those who worked there. But during the federal era, inmates took care of the lawns, operated the boats, and they drove kids to the schoolhouse on the island.
I was never scared. The ones that I came into contact with were very positive. You know, we saw them all the time when we took the boat back and forth.
The BOP years, we were kind of encouraged to speak with them and you know, not to get too friendly, but to treat them with normal human dignity and not to, you know, like be like, oh, it's a prisoner, you know.
BOP means Bureau of Prisons, another way of describing the federal days. Anne Berkeley's dad was in charge of food at the prison. She also runs the McNeil Island Historical Society. She and others say the only time there was any real fear was when an alarm sounded to signal an escape attempt.
When that happened, families were generally instructed to just stay inside until the inmate was found, which they usually were.
But even then, Anne says, some of the older kids who could feel cooped up on an island would hop in their cars and try to find whoever was escaping.
So maybe an element of danger in some of those activities, but for the most part, Simone, there were good experiences. We heard from Becca there, who lived on the island as a child, and she had very fond memories.
Yeah, her memories were very, very strong. She talked about seeing movies on Friday nights. She talked about going bowling at the community center. She talked about being in that one-room schoolhouse. She talked about being in a two-person Girl Scout troop on the island. You know, for her, it really was this idyllic childhood that she was very sad when she had to leave the island when the state took over the prison in the early 80s.
So what do these places look like now? You and Paula got a chance to see that.
Yeah, it's not good. We've talked about how the prison is abandoned and some of the mess you see there, whether all of the things that served these families are just as bad. In that community center, there was a boiler that had sort of exploded. There was like quite a bit of water, quite a bit of flooding. You know, paint is peeling. The houses are boarded up, and it's really quiet and empty.
What did Becca think when she heard your descriptions of those things?
It really brought up a lot of emotions for Becca. And I have to admit, when I first interviewed her, I was a little bit surprised by this because I was like, it's a prison. Like, how attached could you possibly be to this place that had a prison on it? But, you know, you think about it and, you know, imagine if you went to your childhood home or your old elementary school or, you know, things like that. And you just saw that they were being left and reclaimed by nature, that they were falling apart and there were blackberry bushes everywhere. I mean, this was a really significant part of her childhood that's now just kind of being lost.
I think this episode really complicates our view of prisons. You give us a glimpse of life outside the prison and really get a vivid picture of what life was like. And it's brought out in the research and the interviews that you and Paula have done. And now all of that's just gone.
When you hear about someone's closing a prison, no one's going to be like, oh, that's a bad thing, right? Or you're not going to feel remorse for closing a prison. But especially when you hear about the kids who grew up on the island so close to this particular prison on this island, closing it was a real loss for those people. And I think to a certain extent, you hear the same thing even from people who worked there and from people who were locked up there. When you spend so much of your time and your life in this place, you know, you build a connection to it. And so to just, you know, not only to close it, but to just leave it there and to just let it rot, I think really hits people in a profound way.
All right, Simone, thanks so much.
Thanks, Kirsten.
The fourth episode of Forgotten Prison is available now, and new episodes will be released weekly. Listen anytime by subscribing on your favorite podcast app. Find out more and check out KNKX's exclusive photos of McNeil Island at forgottenprison.org. Forgotten Prison is supported in part through a grant from Humanities Washington.